Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Hello and welcome, Duck fans. Where and whenever you're watching or listening, this is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never-before-heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. My name is Nick Cody, former Oregon offensive lineman. With me, as always, is my co-host, Samuel Tidrick-Smith, and we're coming off a pretty encouraging win against Eastern Washington, but Not going to take too much away from it in terms of the talent of the opponent. But what we did see was Coach Lanning encouraging this team to face up and own and play Oregon this week, be 1% better. And I think we saw a lot more than 1% since that game against Georgia. What do you think, Sam?
You know what? This Oregon team looked a lot better. I will stand by the statements made over the last two episodes, which is don't know anything yet. Can't really have too many takeaways from game one, not a ton from game two. This week will tell us a lot, but definitely a more encouraging place to be in. And I'm very excited to dive a little bit more into what we saw on Saturday after our lightning yellow round.
Yep, we're bringing it back, lightning yellow round, and just talking about college football in general, because, you know, I know, Sam, you were impressed with last week's schedule of games, but this week, what an incredible weekend of games we had. I mean, whew. I'm going to start off the clock and start off with my personal favorite here. Ready, set, go. I love seeing Texas lose, but I kind of hate seeing it when the refs give it to Alabama. What a close game, though.
Oh, an incredible ball game there. A game that Texas, it looked like they were going to win, but you know, you gotta just take a little bit more time off that clock. Nick, for me, it was the upsets. The upsets had me this week, and my goodness, whether it was App State getting a win on the road at Texas A&M. Man, an Appalachian State team beating a top 10 opponent early in the preseason. That sounds like I've heard that story before. Also, shout out Marshall taking down Notre Dame. Impressive stuff there.
Yeah, all great upsets, and App State getting game day next week, or this weekend, you could say. Really
deservedly
impressive.
So.
But one thing, not great for the Pac-12, the Gators go down to Kentucky. Not great.
Not at all. That was another upset right there. Number 20, Kentucky took care of business 26-16 against Florida. That was a game I would have expected them to have played at least a little better in. But Utah, the team that took that loss against Florida, oh my goodness, did you see what they did to Southern Utah? 73-7. That's not even really that appropriate. That's just mean to do.
No, and well, while it wasn't quite the blowout at the end of the game at 30-7 would it, you know, tell you, Miami was getting booed right there before the end of the half, because for a minute there, Southern Miss had a 7-point lead for a while. So interesting to see the boos carry down there to South Florida.
Another upset that's worth mentioning on the game, another one in the South, if you will, Tennessee beating Pittsburgh. I'm not going to say the Volunteers are back by any means, but 2-0 beating a higher ranked team. Haven't seen Tennessee in that position in some time.
Let's be fair. It was overtime. And speaking of overtime, oh my goodness, two games I got to mention before we stop the clock. Oregon State almost going to overtime, but opting instead to just run it in with Jack Coletto, man. Oh my goodness. What a great finish to that game in Fresno State. Tough place to play. And flipping back and forth, I know we both were watching BYU and Baylor go into overtime, where they just had a shank off to see who could lose the game. I don't think we saw who won.
I'll tell you what, it was an impressive ball game there. So many games that were close to overtime and overtime. Texas Tech beating Houston, in two overtimes was incredible. And the last Pac-12 team that's going to get a shout out on here, Washington State, going into Wisconsin, coming away with a victory And yes, Watson, the transfer from Wisconsin to Washington State, a pair of touchdowns. He's the difference in that ball game. A great win for the Pac-12 and an even greater win for the Cougars of Washington State.
Yeah, and, you know, a win for everybody. Yeah, too much college football for one lightning round to handle. But, hey, we got it out there. Now let's focus in and recap this Eastern Washington game. Now, the first thing that we should address, because it's going to, again, I'm sure it's going to be a topic this entire season, the expectations of fans, particularly at the quarterback position. Bo Nix had a day, 5 touchdowns, his career record in college football. And, you know, honestly, if we're all being realistic and all criticism ahead, one of those probably could have, should have been an interception, but Terrence Ferguson made an incredible play, located the football, and was able to just power through half the defense and back end to get into the end zone. But honestly, we heard a lot of people saying, oh, start Ty in the second half. And I got to tell you right now, as a former player, that's upsetting to see, because at first it shows me how little you know about football. If you really trust, and if you've decided this guy is your guy, you don't make the change right there. You want to go and see what we saw, go out in third quarter, see that you can still execute at a high level, deal with the defensive adjustments, and come out and still control the football and control the game. And that's what we did. And you want to see, you don't want to put a quarterback in that situation. And, you know, when Ty did get his opportunity, looked pretty good, and he got a great ovation from the crowd. But situationally, man, seeing so many people that were calling for Ty to get in there earlier than would be, even for a risky coach trying to push a young guy, it would make any sense, because this team really was clicking on all cylinders for the most part under Bo Nix.
Nick, I agree with you, and I'm going to get into that, but I'll paint a picture to start with, right? Paint a picture. A beautiful first day for a game down in Autzen, a whole lot of fun, right? Team comes out in the yellow uniforms, looks better than I gave them credit for on Twitter. I'll say that it was a good looking set in person. There's smoke in the air, and usually when there's smoke in the air, it can be a problem. But I'll say, on a day that was supposed to be headlined by the heat, the smoke kind of saved everybody. It cooled it off substantially inside the stadium. It was pretty comfortable, actually. I was in joggers the whole time, no shorts necessary. It was a good, comfortable game. But once we got to our seat, seeing the team warming up, that Autzen atmosphere was there. It was real. It felt like Autzen, and it was a great energy, a great place for a game. The Harley sounded like the Harley. It all felt back and real. We were in Oregon football, and we were glad to be there. When number 10 took the field, Bo Nix, I'll say it, he had a strong performance. 28 of 33, 277 yards, 5 touchdowns in about 2.5 quarters. Impressive stuff. Now, if we were to go back and watch the tape, yeah, you're right. The Terrence Ferguson second touchdown probably should have been an interception. And there was a throw on an out route that, again, was to the inside and looked like maybe a Georgia could have picked that one off. But it was a game that overall, Nix looked much more comfortable. He looked more comfortable in front of the home crowd. He said it in the game interview afterwards on the Pac-12 network. He said it felt great to play here in front of Autzen. This crowd was fun to have behind us, right? That crowd's only going to get better when students get there as well. We all know how that works. I agree with you, though, about your sentiment referring to when Ty Thompson were to come out. To bring him out to start the third would have been a very poor decision. We were saying as much within the section we were sitting. Myself, my good buddy Leland, a longtime friend, a longtime football watching companion, you could say. We were going back and forth with the folks behind us to clarify that you really do need to show that kind of confidence in the guy. And once Thompson got out there, 5 of 7, 63 yards, it wasn't bad at all. But at least to me, I saw some of the things that made me go, oh, okay, yeah. Maybe this is making all the sense in the world. Does he have an arm? Yeah. Is he athletic? Yeah. Were there some passes that were absolutely fluttering? 100%. Were there moments where you said, oh, a guy with a little more zip, a guy who might have a little more understanding of how to place this in this moment would be able to do a little more here? You could see it. You could absolutely see those moments. He's a guy who's developing. True sophomore. That happens. It's understandable. It was good to see Butterfield get in for a drive as well. Whole lot of fun. But the people who I think deserve a shout out in this game the absolute most are going to be the guys who got in at the end. Some of those practice squad players, some of those guys who might not even be on scholarship, but who are coming into Oregon and working their tail off every single week. Seeing a guy like Kilohana Hassenritter get in there at the end of the game. Goodness. By the way, my favorite name of any Oregon Duck in a long time. Kilohana Hassenritter has to be one of my absolute favorite names that I've seen in an Oregon uniform. Being able to see him have that little spin move, dive into the end zone at the end of the game, I think that exemplified everything that that game wanted to be for the Oregon Ducks.
Move into the jump cut, man. That was wild.
Into the jump cut, right? When was I'd seen some Oregon running backs do that before, but it had been a while. It had been some time since we had seen something like that. But to see him get that opportunity, to see the amount of Ducks that got the opportunity to not only play Eastern Washington, but to play against Oregon, as they were saying, it was great to see. And if you haven't checked out Coach Lanning Mic'd Up, definitely do it. Definitely, definitely do it.
It would be your best fantasy pickup this weekend for sure. He was very fun to see out there encouraging guys. And man, the highlights and standouts, we mentioned Ferguson, but Troy Franklin, man, really stepping up.
Troy yards after catch Franklin.
Yeah. That's two guys right there, Ferguson and Franklin, man. Those guys are going to get you your yaks for sure. The big yak and the little yak. I don't know, man. That was impressive to see. We haven't seen that in a long time from an Oregon wide receiver, and especially just, running crisp routes, getting out of bounds when you know it's the best decision, and, living to see the next play once you've picked up first down. Just a lot of really great, great things out of his performance. And in the running backfield, it's going to be hard to know how this distribution of carries was based on the team because, obviously that fourth quarter, you're getting Hassenritter a lot, like I think 7 carries in there. But it felt like everybody got their 5 to 8 to 9 touches. Sean Dollars, I think, led with 9 touches with carries. But we saw, honestly, this is it seems like the coaching staff is committed to a really even distribution of carries, which is unusual for Oregon fans to see. But all those guys showed at certain points things that they really can contribute to this offense that do make them unique and why they should be out there. And aside from a couple times where we got tripped up by our own mesh point in the backfield, we had a really productive day of getting positive yards, which is encouraging to see. Now against an opponent like Eastern Washington, it's expected. Do we do that against BYU this week? That's going to be a lot different. But our offensive line, certainly with Marcus Harper getting the start up there, looked impressive for the most part, and was able to kind of physically manhandle people up front. I think we also, on the other side of the ball, have some mishaps. We're missing tackles in the backfield that should result in tackles for a loss. So I think if we clean up, just some of those mishaps that happened right there, right behind the line of scrimmage, man, both sides of the football are going to really, really stand out. But it was encouraging to see us dominate a lot on the defensive side and the edges. And other than them really getting that great return and a couple BS calls and plays on that one drive, scoring drive, I really feel like the defense had a really good day, and it was good to see them bounce back because it was rough seeing how they played against Georgia, and they definitely cleaned up tackling quite a bit.
Well, you mentioned the running back distribution, right? And I think that while we might not be able to take away anything regarding how good or how bad this team or individuals are against these last two opponents, I think we can see some things in terms of coaching decisions made. And out of the running backs who ran the ball last week, there were 39 carries, right? Typically, if you hear 39 carries, 5 backs, you might assume that somebody's got around 20 and there's maybe some work at the end. Not the case for this Oregon team. As you mentioned, Sean Dollars with 9, Irving, Whittington, each with 8, Cardwell, Hassenritter, each with 7. That's about as even as distribution as you can get. If you were to be, if you really were just to trot everybody out there and not give an opponent an idea of who you wanted to go with, that is how you would do it. I'm not sure if that's how Oregon's doing it. Coach Lanning has said many, many times that if you are talented enough, he's going to try to find ways to get you out onto the field. how that distribution works out this coming week or down the line, we'll have to see. But it was extremely even there. And credit to all the guys who did run the ball. 29 yards for Whittington. You had 37 for Haason Ritter, 48 for Cardwell, 58 for Dollars, and then Marquise Irving, 74. I thought that he really, really looked much improved as opposed to how he looked in that Georgia game. He looked much more comfortable running behind that offensive line and with that unit in this game. That was a group that I was definitely impressed with. But, Nick, at halftime of that game, I gave you a call. I called you from Autzen Stadium at halftime of that game, and you mentioned the two guys that I was talking about nonstop. It was Terrence Ferguson, and it was Troy, yards after catch. That's all I'm calling him now, Franklin. Because, oh my goodness, the incredible plays that we saw out of these two guys, Franklin making players miss. And yes, you are playing Eastern Washington. There will be a talent drop off there. You probably can break a couple of tackles against Eastern Washington. You might not be able to against other teams, especially Georgia. But Franklin looked very impressive, and I loved the effort on almost every play. It wasn't unintelligent yards after catch, if that makes sense. It wasn't like he was putting himself and the ball in a bad position to try to get a couple extra. He was taking what was there and very intelligently stepping out or ending the play when it needed to be ended. But the guy who impressed me the most was Terrence Ferguson. I think everybody can agree it was Terrence Ferguson. Three catches, 35 yards, two touchdowns. The two touchdowns, each one incredible. A great run after catch, an athletic move to get around defenders. Great block by Sean Dollars, by the way, on that play. And then the tip ball, the catch by Terrence Ferguson. I stand by what I tweeted out during this game. This dude is one of, if not the best tight end products we've seen since probably Ed Dixon, just a guy who fits that NFL mold that well. He thoroughly impressed me in that ball game. But the defense did some great work as well. I know you mentioned it a little bit, but I'd be happy to let you jump back into some of the things we saw out of that unit as the game progressed.
Yeah, well, before I do, I got to give a mention to another tight end that had a score that night. Wearing Spencer Webb's number 18, it was great to see finally Cam McCormick getting a touchdown in Autzen Stadium. You could tell the fans responded loud and proud, and what a great moment for that young man after everything. Oh,
I know. I was jumping up and down celebrating.
Man, everything he's been through to come through all the injuries, and it looked like he was coming on the Ohio State catch and then injury from that. And it's amazing. And I wish him the best through this year, staying healthy. And I hope we can see a lot more of those in Autzen Stadium and on the road a couple places, because, man, our tight end room, it's really impressive right now. And shout out to all those guys. And again, in the passing game, not just, the guys that are catching the ball, but like you said, Dollars downfield, some of the backs out of the backfield. I thought we looked really, really good and in sync, especially compared to week one. Defensively, man, oh, where do we start? Some of the big plays, big hits, just the things that we were missing out on in week one were back. That's what you want to see. And I think it was Keith Brown's hit. Was that the one that just, I believe you did. I Autzen go as quiet as it seemed like the television made it, because, man, that hit sucked the wind
one in the
out
fourth quarter.
Yes.
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you, I had that play. I was filming that exact play and just happened to get it. But there are two things about that specific play that are impressive. Number one, Keith Brown hits just as hard as we all thought Keith Brown can hit. Oh, my goodness. That dude can level somebody. And also, if you go back and watch that play, the push Braden Swinson gets on the tackle is incredible. Just completely removes him from the play. Absolutely bonkers stuff there from a pair of guys that have a lot of Power 5, Division 1, whatever you want to call it, Pac-12 game experience.
Yeah.
Just putting in work against these Eastern Washington backups and really making things look silly. But I think with this defense, a couple of things that really stuck out is that still a lot of work to be done. Edges still really got to improve. Washington State was still able to take care of some things on the outside.
Eastern Washington.
I thought it was huge for this team. Washington. So Eastern Washington really was able to take advantage of those outside edges. But I think that it was a confidence boost that this crew could use.
Yeah. Well, and in terms of confidence boosters, too, one guy that it probably definitely needed one was Gonzo out there getting an interception. And, you know, it gets this level of team, you know, you're expected to get some turnovers. But that was a nice looking interception. And he had a good day overall. I thought, you know, especially our defensive backfield, that's one of those things. If you're bringing in a new system, the defensive line, they can figure out some things where they line up, what their responsibilities are, but really communicating as a defensive backfield under a new coaching staff, that's really hard to get right. And you could tell Georgia exploited that where Eastern Washington wasn't able to. So good on those guys in the back end. And really, like I said, you know, at least when it was one-on-ones, best on best out there, we really didn't give up all that much until it was unfortunately that big special teams play, which is another thing I think we saw we need some work on. But going into BYU, at least it's interesting and unusual as a Duck fan to feel confident in at least our field goal kicking game, because that's one area of special teams that feels like we've improved significantly.
I gotta tell you, Nick, I think I really don't want to say anything too confident in jinx things, but I am a fan of this Oregon kicking unit. I'm a fan, man. I think Camden Lewis has improved so much from the Camden Lewis that had us shaking in our boots in 2019. The Camden Lewis that got fans to rush the field after beating a subpar Washington State team because they couldn't believe he hit a field goal. To go from that to being the guy in 2022 that Oregon fans feel extremely confident in, that I'm like, oh, he's got it. That's a lot of improvement. And that's something that I have loved to see from Camden Lewis. And credit to Barry as well. Again, the transfer from Temple. I said it last week. One of the few guys to have impressed me after the Georgia game. He did it again this week. One punt, 39 yards, landed inside the, I think inside the 25, and he took it from about his own. It was decent work there. I really am confident in the kickers in the special team unit. There are other issues in coverage, as you mentioned, but the kickers themselves, this seems to be a really, really strong group for Oregon.
Yeah, and Camden almost got the tackle there, but got a little jersey instead. But, you know, it's good.
He would have if he had to. He had a defender there to take care of it. He would have if he had to.
It's not the days of me going out there and hoping Rob Beard's going to go light somebody up. It's more of me going, please don't hurt yourself. We need you, because kicking game's a lot different than back in my day, where actually seems like we might utilize it at some point. But it was good, even if it's all extra points, man. Those used to be even shaky for us. So, you know, just being able to line up and count on that extra point, and, you know, without all the window dressing and stuff that we used to do back in my day. Hey, I hope it helps the kicker out. I hope we're able to, you know, be consistent with that this season. But again, as always, whenever we talk about kickers as Oregon fans, I'm just knocking on wood here. It's just what we have to do. We've been conditioned this way, the superstitions of us. So especially going into BYU after watching that game, I don't know if it was some kind of curse or what, but it was just like whatever was going wrong there at Brigham Young University that night. It was like the kickers did not want the game to end.
That was a, yeah, and I'm glad that it at least for now appears Oregon has somebody who may be able to help in a situation like that. One thing, Nick, that stuck out to me, right, about this game, and it's about the defense, and I had to confirm it today when I looked at this. 31 different Oregon football players recorded at least a single tackle.
Yep.
Yeah. 31. That is so much involvement. And yes, I understand that you're playing Eastern Washington, you're going to shuffle guys in and out. But that's basically three full rungs of the depth chart all getting involved in the action. That kind of experience seems invaluable to this football team, especially a young team, especially a team with as many transfers as this Oregon team has.
Yeah, and, you know, in my experience, I think the closest thing I had to that as a player was when we played Portland State. I think we had a couple games that were up there, but the one I know I got the most out of was playing Portland State in those third and fourth quarters and still being a solid second and third string guy. I got to play not just a lot of those snaps, probably the most snaps I had in my career, But I got to play almost every position but center on the offensive line in that game. I got to play in combination with different guards that I worked better with, some I didn't work as well with, guys that I communicated really well with. And you're able to work those things out in live game reps that just in practice, it's not the same because coaches can stop and say, okay, here's what you got to do, or they can correct it on film, or, you know, but everything is magnified out there on game day. There's nothing like game reps. And so when you get that opportunity to go out there and play, you know, maybe a different position, give yourself a different look that you might not be ideal for you and the team in a game where you haven't already had it kind of settled and won, but these early games that, you know, out of conference where you get those opportunities, man, it's really invaluable, not just for your team this year, but, you know, and later in the year, especially when you have some injuries and have to have some guys step up, but really looking forward for long-term development. And with a new coaching staff, I think they're seeing a lot of things that they must like if they're getting that many guys out there to make some tackles.
Well, and I just like knowing that this Oregon football team, if at any point it's called upon, they've got guys who've got the time. Even if it's a freshman like Florence, for example, who got into this game, had some strong moments in it, or even somebody as experienced as Steve Stevens, for example, someone who's been with the program for a long time now, has taken advantage of a redshirt, taken advantage of the COVID year. I think that regardless of who you are, these reps are going to be big down the line. I'm glad that they're occurring now. Another thing that sticks out about this tackling, nobody's got more than 3 total tackles either, which means that as many guys were able to play, he didn't overwork anybody in particular either. Everybody seems to have gotten in, out, stayed pretty healthy throughout it. It's as much as you can ask for.
Yep. And shout out again to my long-haired friend, Casey Rogers, out there locking it down on the inside, getting one of those 3 tackles out there. So shout out to him. And again, overall, just a fun day to be a Duck. I can't wait. You're making me jealous. Can't wait to be back in Autzen Stadium this weekend for BYU. As we talked about previously, the 2010 class getting inducted to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, get to go and hopefully get to see many of you there and get to be honored on the field. So keep an eye out for me. I think right after the first quarter, before the second. And we need to channel as much positive, you know, beat the Cougs energy this week, because BYU is coming in ranked. You know, they have that great win over Baylor in overtime, which hopefully sucks some of the life out of them. But it's been a while since we've beaten BYU. And I know it's wasn't in my time, but I have some very, very awful memories of some, I think it was Las Vegas and Grello helmets with ghost flames. Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. I've tried not to remember it. But
a little thing about the Grello helmet that just sticks out to me so much. It's such a little thing. And I mean this by little. Why was there a miniature green O on the back of it? I understand the O on the big O on the back of the winged helmet. But to just have a little one that just looks like a speck on TV, what else could have been wrong with that helmet? That's one of that has to be the worst Oregon helmet of all time. Everyone's come together and agreed on that.
And the sad thing is like when you see it in person, like when I was getting recruited, they had it on the table there in like 2006, 2007, like at banquets and stuff. And it looked cool in person, but none of those details really popped on the TV camera. And again, yeah, I thought the O placement in the back was silly, but even man, worse.
Just one more thing on. I'm sorry. I'm the guy for this. I'm sorry. I have to get
it. I know.
Why did they all look like a normal yellow helmet that got put in the washing machine like 500 times before it went out on the I don't understand why the yellow had to be so faded. It looked like it had worn off.
It was a metal flake paint job. That was the television sets, unfortunately. It didn't make it look as good. And that helmet
never looked good through any lens ever that wasn't an eye.
That helmet, as ugly as it was, wasn't as ugly as the games we played it in at Boise 2008 and 2006. The Vegas Bowl, baby. Yeah, we weren't excited as much as BYU was. And anytime you're playing BYU in the Vegas Bowl, probably going to be at a disadvantage unless you've got your team pretty well locked down. That would have been, I think we would have been okay in my era, but that's a tough ask to get your team locked down for a week in Vegas while you're going against BYU. But I think in Autzen Stadium, it's a lot more to our advantage. And I mean, when BYU's come to Autzen, hasn't always worked out well for him, has it, Sam?
It definitely hasn't. I mean, this is a team that really, if we're going to really look at it, this is a rubber match. This is an all-time rubber match. Oregon and BYU, 3-3 in all-time matchups against each other. This is a matchup that goes back, honestly, kind of a long – it's a long-running matchup, if you will. This is one that has definitely been played many times. I think recent years, the 2008 game, as you mentioned, is the one that at least sticks out with the most fans of today, really, just because it was that bowl game. It was the last time these two teams played. It's the last game that Oregon probably wanted to have played against this team for a while, but that 2006 game, we've been saying 2008 a couple times, 2006 it was exactly, an Oregon loss. Before that, though, Oregon won games in 64-65, lost to BYU in 78-89, but 1990, Oregon played a huge game against a BYU Cougars team that was coming in 4-0. They were led by a quarterback. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Ty Detmer may or may not have won a Heisman Trophy. He was a pretty talented player, it turned out, back in the day. But Oregon made him look silly. The Ducks came out, forced a whole bunch of turnovers, 5 interceptions in that ball game. The Ducks were able to win against an undefeated BYU team that was ranked higher than them in a preseason matchup in September. I kind of like where that leads, Nick.
Exactly. And what better former player to talk to this week for our very special guest than the person that had 3 picks in that game, cornerback Darryl Smith. So with us now on a very special interview for BYU Week to try and channel some BYU winning energy, we have former defensive back Darryl Smith. Darryl, thank you for joining us today. And, you know, with BYU coming up, we're going to get into why that is such a special game for you. But first and foremost, as a junior college transfer coming in to the University of Oregon, what's it like looking at the program now versus when you came in?
Wow, it's night and day. The depth that they have now is far greater than what maybe we had when I first arrived at Oregon. Although there were some very talented players, I don't want to shortchange anyone. But the recruiting classes, if you obviously you guys have noticed, they're in the top 10. You know, pretty much yearly, it seems like.
Darryl, coming into Oregon, you came to the school in 1990. The school definitely wasn't looked at the way it is now in so many ways, but what attracted you to Eugene, Oregon at that time?
You know what? It was the environment. It was a perfect college town. It wasn't, you know, I come from a big city, Los Angeles, so, you know, I was pretty used to that, pretty tired of that. So as far as just the environment was outstanding. So that was one thing. And then obviously the defensive schemes were fit my experience. We ran a lot of the same coverages that we ran in junior college. So it was a great fit for me. And on top of that, I thought Oregon had the best starting secondary when I came in with guys like Chris Odom, you know, Darryl Reed, some of the other guys.
Yeah, over the years, Oregon has taken a lot of pride in producing a lot of great secondaries over the years. You know, my time, the D-Boy era, and even now, we see guys like Javon Holland tearing it up in the NFL. What's it like for you to kind of be like the foundation for that? And do you take a lot of pride in seeing where NFL's defensive back or Oregon's NFL defensive backs have come to this day?
Yes, yes. I mean, absolutely. You know, we just try to really sort of do our job. So at Oregon, when I was there, we really just tried to come in and play our part and do what we needed to do. Now, today's athletes that they have at Oregon are such far more, seems like faster and, you know, just on it as far as I can see. So it's just an outstanding program, I think, right now.
Darryl, when you got to Oregon, of course, the legendary Rich Brooks was the coach of the program at the time. You show up in Eugene. What is the energy of the program like? What was it like being coached by somebody who is now looked at as such a legend for the Oregon program?
You know, Rich Brooks was great. You know, obviously a legend at Oregon. You know, his charisma is one of the things also that attracted me to the program. You know, Rich Brooks is obviously the best coach I've had in my career. So the energy was great.
So I've got to ask, I've had to run 100-yard sprints in Autzen and nearly died. What's it like taking a 95-yard interception back to the house? What's that feeling like? What's that energy like? Is there anything like it? And then when you go watch that on film, is there anything you got to say? Is there any bragging that you even need to do, or do you just put that clip on and just sit back?
You know, I wasn't blessed with 4.3 speed or anything like that, so it was like I had a monkey on my back. So, yes, I was gassed already. It was a fun experience. If you remember that, I think Ernest Jones was running with me. You know, I think he ended up being 295-pound defensive lineman at some point in his career, and he was running right there with me. So that lets you know where my speed was. But it was a fun time. Great, great memories.
All right, Daryl. This is BYU week for this Oregon football team. It's a big game. It's going to be a nationally televised game on Fox. You yourself played in a huge game in Autzen against BYU, your fourth game with the program. The quarterback who eventually wins the Heisman Trophy is coming in, a ranked BYU team. You guys get the upset. Before we even get into your personal heroics in that game, just tell me about a little bit of the atmosphere and the energy going into that ball game that morning.
I tell you, we were ready for that game the day after we lost the year before. Once we saw that game on film and we realized kind of what we let slip through our hands, I mean, I was redshirting that year, but that game was really on our minds for quite some time. Once the offseason hit, BYU was on the schedule. We circled that thing. So we were quite ready going into that week. We were as focused as we could be. The practice that week was outstanding. And for me to remember a practice in a week is impressive. So I remember the practices. We were really just on point. We were ready for that team. They said a few things in the paper, if I remember right. And that also motivated us.
Well, and you certainly were motivated. I know as a young duck coming up, anytime BYU came up with any old school fans, your name is the first that comes up, because three interceptions is certainly a standout in any game, but against a Heisman Trophy winner, what's that like for you when, you know, you get to talk to old school fans like that, that remember that game? What do you tell them about that day that stands out to you most?
What stands out to me most is the effort that the entire team had, really. We were so focused on that game. You know, Bill Musgrave, the defensive front, Sean Burwell, you know, just all the guys were really focused. Steve Kemp played a big role that game. So, you know, we were really just ready to go.
You mentioned Steve Kemp. He had two interceptions that day. You yourself, as Nick said, had three. Was there something you guys had seen on film that week that let you know that there were going to be a lot of opportunities? Or was it once you hit the field, a lot of balls were floating and you realized you could make a play?
Going back to that, if I remember right, we knew that they ran a lot of crossing routes. So we had some coverages in place to deal with that. So we were pretty well prepared. We knew that the corners were going to be on an island except for crossing routes. So we were really ready. They tried to go deep on us quite a few times, which you guys know, and we were successful defending that.
Yeah, that's an understatement, I think. You know, you say you really enjoyed that preparation for the practice. What about Eugene in particular stood out to you in your time there with your teammates? What memories and what places do you still go back and visit to this day and have fond memories of?
You know, camaraderie was great for us, and you hear that quite often with former players at any, you know, any level of the sport. So for us, it's just, and for me, I should say, it's just the guys. You know, it's having a number of people, a number of teammates that are focused on one goal together. And that's really what I remember most. Eugene is a great place, Tracktown Pizza. I was trying to think of there was another pizza place that had some great pizza bread that was on it. Not too far from Tracktown. I just can't remember the name of it, but nevertheless, there were, you know, places to eat. Taylor's, I think it's no longer there, but I'm hearing.
Nope. No more. Rest in peace, Taylor's. For the better now. It had some dark days at the end.
There's that area right there, right next to the campus, was always fun. So, you know, the campus was great. The track meets were great. So just a great time. Just a great time. Great city, great college town for someone who's really serious about their education and having a good college experience, you know, overall.
You mentioned the city of Eugene, and it's a city that actually has changed so much in the last 10 to 20 years. When was the last time you were able to be back in Eugene, or the last Oregon football game you were able to attend?
Wow, you're testing my memory right now. It was only a few years ago. Who did we play? I can't recall who we played that day. I want to say it's like Stanford or something like that. I think it was Stanford maybe about 3 years ago. I had a great time.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm just getting to go back down for the BYU game this weekend because they're honoring, the 2010 class. And just one of the things that, you know, whenever I go back that I'm really proud of that they're continuing to do now a lot more than I think they did even in the past is honor former players, put people's names right there on the building. So it kind of lasts forever with what we continue to build upon, with the facilities and everything. It's an entirely different world from even when I was there. What stands out to you the most now when you go back and you see the HDC and what about it just is like the most unreal to think back and think like, what, this used to be a parking lot.
You know, when I went back, I can't remember the tight end's name, but there was a tight end that was being recruited. I think he ended up not signing, or maybe he had to go to junior college or something. I don't remember his name. I don't want to put his name out there if I did remember. But they were doing the photo shoot, and I was just amazed that all of the pageantry that they incorporate in recruiting. Now I was like, oh my goodness. All I got was a handshake, I think. but the facilities are unbelievable because when I was there, they were still just starting out. I think I got in the building and we didn't have anything but the concrete that was really up. There was no extras at all, no paneling or anything. So what it is now is just unbelievable. You know, I think we walked across the street for our practices when I was there. So I think now it's just right next to the building when the practices, and then they have an indoor. There was none of that. When it snowed, we were still out there practicing. So night and day is all I can say. Yeah.
Daryl, if you had to speak to this young Oregon team, a team that struggled in their first game of the season, but bounced back well last week against Eastern Washington, going into a top 25 matchup against a team that is favored, much like you did against BYU yourself, what would you tell these young guys to get them really prepared for this upcoming ball game?
Make sure first that you have your fundamentals down. So whatever that is, when it comes to tackling or, you know, making sure you hold leverage, those things, keeping your outside arm free. All those things that you've learned as a youngster, don't rely so much on your talent. Just go in there and make sure that you do the fundamentals, do your job, and the team will be successful if you handle your responsibilities.
Now, you mentioned how much recruiting has changed. Do you think, you know, with Coach Lanning coming in, being, you know, the youngest Power 5 head coach, do you think Oregon is really kind of embracing that in this time more than a lot of other schools, especially in the Pac-12?
Having a young coach, I think, is great for recruiting. You know, it's a different generation now than when I was coming up. You kind of look for a father figure, whereas now they kind of look for almost like a, I guess, closer to maybe a mentor, someone who they can relate to, where that really wasn't the case when I was coming up. So, yeah, I think Lanning's a great hire. I think he has a chance to be really great here. Hopefully he stays for a while. If we can get a coach to stay for a while, I think the sky's the limit for us.
Daryl, the Oregon Ducks is a program. You said it yourself, just getting somebody to stay for a while, getting somebody to stay in place. You were one of so many players who had the luxury of being in a system that had been working for a long, long time in terms of Coach Brooks having been there for many years, having many of the same assistants for many years. Do you think that that's something that Oregon is likely to build again? And what do you think the value was that you took away from that kind of system?
Continuity. If you have continuity, you gain experience at a faster rate. You can go back and rely on that experience. When you have a new coaching staff and they bring in a new scheme, you kind of have to think a lot more before you can just naturally react. So hopefully Manning is the right guy for the job. And he stays a while, and we'll see the fruits of that, I think.
Yeah, I definitely hope so. And I do agree. I think, you know, you definitely saw the comparison from week one to week two that the players were thinking a lot against Georgia and trying to figure out way too much. And when the other teams already got that figured out, it's always a tough situation to be in. I'm going to just leave you with one more question, and I'm going to beat my friend Sam here to asking it, because we love to ask on this show what every former Ducks favorite uniform combo is, whether it was something they played in or something they've seen in a bowl game or in a certain game in particular. What is your favorite uniform you've seen on the Ducks team?
Because I was going to say, shoots, we just had a home and away when I played.
Right.
For the most part. You know what? I like the black pants with the yellow and the yellow helmet. I like that uniform. I like them all, but that uniform stands out to me.
Daryl, the very last thing we'll leave you with, and then we'll let you get back to vacation, get back to a birthday week that you've been having, which, by the way, happy birthday. We are so
happy
grateful
birthday.
You could take the time to join us this week. What has Daryl Smith been doing since his time at Oregon? What are you doing now? How can Duck fans keep up with you these days?
Well, my Instagram is SmittyUO20, the number 2020. Right now, I work at a juvenile placement facility down here in Los Angeles. I've been doing that really since I graduated from college. You know, I try to make sure that I vacation quite often. And make sure I enjoy life. I've had a few health issues as of recent. So I'm just really appreciative of, you know, just the opportunity at life. So each day I kind of try to live it as my last. One day it will be. So, yeah.
Well, Daryl, thank you very much again for coming on. And we wish you best with your health issues. And again, happy birthday. Thank you for taking the time. And once a duck, always a duck. Thank you for sharing that perspective with us.
Yes, thank you guys for having me. Go Ducks.
Go Ducks. Well, man, I mean, we don't often get a lot of classic before my time interviews, but if we could get any for BYU Week, honestly, not a better guest. A great get, Sam.
Oh, man. I mean, I was just grateful he was willing to jump on with us, especially on vacation and out in – enjoying Las Vegas with the family. But man, glad to have had him on. Very excited to post some of those clips, maybe with a couple clips of him making plays as well, because it was impressive what he was able to do against that BYU squad back in 1990. Three interceptions, picking off a Heisman winner thrice. Impressive stuff.
New Mexico? I can't remember if it was New Mexico State or who the team was. He had the 95
New
reception.
Mexico State feels right.
But man, you got to check that out. We'll try and get that clip up there for you, because that's an amazing play too. That one goes down in Duck history. But speaking of Duck history, we've mentioned it before. This game is going to go down as, the one that decides it. Is it the Ducks? Is it BYU? We each have a couple of good wins, but this one, man, this one seems to matter a lot more than usual because, hey, we're both ranked. We're both out here to prove some this year. And especially after having interviewed their head coach for the previous opening at Oregon, there's a lot of storylines going into this game. What interests you most going into it, Sam?
Well, you're right with storylines. This is a game, and it's rare that you have a game that both is fantastic in terms of storylines and the game itself. A lot of the times you'll have a situation where the storylines are great, but it ends up being an iffy game, or the game is great, but if we were to like look for those headline moments, they might not really be there. This one has both. You mentioned Kalani Sitake. He interviewed for the Oregon job, didn't get it. You can't tell me that's not on his mind. Just a little tiny bit in the back there. Also, this BYU team, this BYU community has rightfully so been able to talk a lot of smack to the Pac-12 in recent years. Yeah. I would love to sit here and say that they're just chirping for no reason, but look at the records. They've taken down a lot of Pac-12 teams of late. This is a team that can absolutely play. They're the 12th ranked team in the country. They're going to be coming in confident. They're going to be coming in off a huge win over Baylor. Will it be a hangover game? I would love to say so, but I definitely couldn't ever assume something like that would be the case. So Oregon-BYU matchup is going to be very, very, very interesting. Whether you're looking for a matchup of two quarterbacks who have shown potential but also shown issue, whether you're looking for a couple of defenses that are extremely, extremely talented, a coach that's brand new versus a coach that's been with the program for a lot of time, or you're just looking for an Oregon Twitter user to be making fun of Mormons all day long, there is everything you could look for in this ball game. And I think it's going to be a really, really fun one, both in the stands, on the field, from home, wherever you're taking this one in, it'll be enjoyable.
Yeah, everyone talking a lot of trash on Twitter better be prepared coming with their pee bags in hand. That's for sure. I'm really excited for this game, especially being there in person. There's a lot I want to see. And you did mention there is the potential for that kind of hangover, that lull from that overtime win last week. And when you see players rush or fans rush the field with players and that excitement, I always think about that, because Oregon, we've definitely dealt with having to rebound from that kind of excitement and high in the past. And it's not easy to do. And it takes a very mature team with a lot of leaders. But that's one of the things BYU is always known for, is mature players. So anything that, I don't expect anything to really carry over from that game, except, hopefully the kicking woes are still able to carry right over into Autzen Stadium for them, because it would be nice to finally have a very confident kicking matchup, especially if the game goes close or into overtime like that one. But I'm not sure if I expected to. When I look at the numbers and the stats, I see a defense that is impressive. But an offense that I still need to see, and all credit to Baylor, it could be just, a matchup of two great defenses in that last game, but I wasn't all that impressed with what I saw. I do worry about, Oregon's ability to contain a quarterback with some mobility like we have with, Jaren Hall. But I think if we're able to get some pressure and actually finish tackles and sacks in the backfield, it could work against them. His mobility might end up being, something that takes other playmakers off the field, because they certainly have them. I believe they had a wide receiver, number 23, stood out a lot during that game. And they have a lot of playmakers and a lot of older guys, and obviously a coaching staff that they've had be pretty consistent for many, many years. But Oregon ultimately has so many great athletes and a two deep that, you know, like our guest said, we haven't seen this at Oregon really ever before. This much depth, this level of talent in terms of recruiting rankings and even transfer talent coming in, that we are up there in terms of college football in the top 10, 15 schools in terms of recruiting consistently. And that just isn't the same with BYU. They have to try and find different ways to win games because, you know, you're just not able to recruit to that school like you can others, but they find other ways to do it, man. They're a tough football team, and it's really going to be a gut check for especially our defense, I think, to see just how we hang in there and how much we improve from, you know, Eastern Washington, sure, but that's a different level of opponent. I think we saw a lot of the athletes on their offense in particular couldn't hang with us. And even when they had to score a touchdown, you have to have your receiver illegally blocking three of our guys to be able to get your guy open to be able to score on us. So it's not going to be like that against BYU. They will have better athletes.
Well, I'll tell you, Dave Aranda, Baylor's coach, really good defensive mind. There's a reason that a lot of Oregon fans were clamoring for him to be the head coach during the search last offseason. I think that it is worth noting that it's worth saying that because he is they are a very talented group. Baylor's offense looks like it was not a Baylor's offense, excuse me, BYU's offense. I'm looking at both these teams right here. It definitely could have shown more, but there is a specific piece that concerns me personally. And it has to do with not who played, but who didn't play for BYU. BYU's two top receivers from 2021 did not play in that game. And the last news update we have about either of them is in reference to that game. We have no idea whether these guys will take the field or not. Puka Nuka, one of the leading receivers last year, got injured, sprained an ankle in the very first ball game of the year. Unsure whether or not he'll be able to make it back. He's currently questionable. And then Gunnar Romney, another very, very talented receiver for that team, hasn't played at all this season due to an unspecified injury. But again, not ruled out yet for this coming week.
Yep. If those and just real quickly, but Oregon, Oregon fans might be familiar with Puka Nacua from his time at Washington. So we have at least a little tape on him.
Exactly. We've seen him before. I mean, we've seen what he's capable of doing, and it's impressive stuff. He definitely is a very talented player, and I think that for this Oregon secondary that's had moments, two of the two starters having interceptions last week, but also struggled against Georgia, there's a little give and take there. If one of or both of these guys is able to play in the game this coming weekend, that's a huge piece for BYU. It's a really big piece of this volume. Now you're giving Hall, a guy who has gotten some NFL scouts' attention for absolute sure, giving him a really quality top target and two guys that probably will to some capacity play on Sunday. Very, very talented players, the both of them. If they do not play though, then I think you're going to see a BYU team that's much more resembling the one we saw last Saturday. One that has to run the ball a lot more. One that is going to be taking advantage of opportunities in the passing game, but might not really be looking to completely stretch you out the way that they're capable of when Nacua, when Romney are available. Those two guys are going to be a huge piece to the puzzle this coming week as to what BYU's offense looks like and what Oregon's defense has to deal with.
Yeah, well, and, I'm interested to see a lot from our team in particular, because what we did and what we schemed up in terms of the install for week one versus week two is very, very different. A lot of different formations, a lot of different things we saw. And one of the things we got from Twitter from Mike, one of our regulars at RavenDucks1, said, guys, do you think there is more in the playbook that Dilly hasn't shown yet? I think everyone was thinking there would be more downfield passing, but it's still mostly been short stuff. Hashtag wants a duck. Thank you, Mike. What do you think about that?
Yes. Short answer, yes. Long answer, we've seen two games that we all kind of knew the outcome to. I think the coaching staff, if they're being completely honest with you, would say the exact same. I think that we have seen the kind of offense that you would run against the best team in the country when you understand that that's probably not going to be victory. And we've seen the exact type of offense you'd expect to run against an outmatched opponent who you expect to win against. I think that this BYU game could show us a bit more, for sure. I think that there is a chance that they will go downfield more. But also, I think that something that Nick said post-game that I think has been said by the coaching staff repeatedly is that Oregon wants to take what's there. This isn't a team that necessarily wants to be forcing an issue right now. They want to take advantage of what's available. If the 5-yard out is available every single play, you do it. If that hot route's available every single time you have the ball and he's going to get 4, 5, 6 yards on that play, you give it to him until he doesn't get that. Because as long as he is, you will end up in the end zone. Oregon proved that. They had more first downs last week than in any game previous in program history. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this. I think it was about 40 first downs. That's 10 first downs a quarter. Do you understand how crazy that is? That's incredible, especially for a team like Oregon that has historically been, at least over the last 20 years, a quick strike kind of team, bunch of yards in every play. To have Oregon march the way that they did so diligently was extremely impressive. I think that as long as you can do that, you should do that. I don't think that there's, if you're scoring 70 points, regardless of who it's about, don't fix what's not broke. But also, as teams eliminate options, as teams improve, as you play better opponents, you'll have to do more. And I'm sure that when the time comes, Oregon will do such.
Yeah. And I'd like to, you know, reframe things for people because everyone likes to refer to the term playbook. And I like to think of that as that's your master manual, right? That's your whole manuscript of everything you could go back in and throw out there as a coach, as a player, and as someone trying to get your coaches ready in the college football level. You're trying to find the right couple of plays, especially fundamental ones, that you're going to go in there with a couple wrinkles and a couple things you're able to work on that week in practice. And you get that tight. It's a lot like writing. When you go back and you refine and you take different things you've learned in your experience and you take what you're going to put towards your audience and what your goal is, and you go and try and really, really hone in on that during your practice week, and you find out, okay, maybe if this defense we've seen them run, we try these couple plays out on Monday, and the ones that work, we keep in. Maybe we shuffle some other ones out on Tuesday. This is essentially how a lot of different college football programs are able to figure out what your install is that week and what you're going to go with on game day. So it's definitely always going to be an evolving thing if you're dealing with someone that has an extensive knowledge of offensive schemes and wants to try a bunch of different things against a bunch of different defenses. Now, I think over the years, we've been kind of conditioned to see us just force whatever we kind of wanted to on offense and try and establish that. But I think we're going to see a lot, and we already have week one to week two, seen a lot more variety in what we have out there available to us on game day. So I think that's huge to take into consideration. And yeah, as Bo Nix said, they are taking what the defense is giving you. And when you consider you're playing a team like Eastern Washington, I imagine the one thing they're telling those guys is, hey, we understand you're going to get beat. You're going to get pushed around at times. Just don't give up big plays. And that, what are you going to do then? You have to take the underneath routes. There's going to be teams that challenge us a lot more with athletes that can match up in one-on-one situations a lot better, where we'll hopefully see a lot more deep balls, a lot of the deep passing game. But yeah, like you said, you got to take what they give you. And I was really impressed with us able to march down the field consistently, you know, control the football for the most part, and really just punch it in when we needed to, and consistently just jam it down their throat, you know, different kinds of ways, whether it was in the passing game efficiently or, you know, just finding out different run schemes that work. I loved it. So overall, even though it wasn't downfield passing like we expected, we'll see that against the teams that it's open to being able to challenge eventually, I believe. But again, I think one more thing from Twitter. We didn't get a lot of response. Hopefully you guys are following us, and next time can let us know any questions or guests you want us to have. But Sam, from our good friend Ruben at Ranchito Grill, how do you like your carne asada cooked?
However the chef sees fit. I trust a chef's palate far before I trust my own. It's one of those situations, Nick, where much like offensive line play, I will always defer it to you because I understand you know it far better than I ever will. I will do the same with cooking carne asada. As much as I may enjoy the meal, as much as I may enjoy making it, I will always trust the professional to take care of business.
Yeah, exactly. That's a smart answer, my friend. And I know a lot of people are going to be at Ranchito Grill Friday before the game, the night this releases, and then Saturday, hope to see as many of you out there after the game as possible for comedy open mic I'll be hosting and performing at, and hopefully give a few things away. You guys that like jerseys, show up. There'll be an authentic game jersey I plan to raffle off. So yeah, thank you, Ruben. We will always trust you on the carne asada cooking, but steaks, I'll go medium rare every time, all day. But yeah, any Mexican restaurant, you just got to go with what they have best. And Cantaritos, that's what you need if you go to Ranchito Grill, a Cantarito. Just tell them Nick sent you.
Nick, when it comes to cooking, I trust chefs, but when it comes to predicting football games, I kind of trust us. I feel like we've been pretty decent about it. If we look at our records over the last four seasons, I think we're doing all right.
I'm glad you trust us, because I don't know what I'm doing. Every single time we get to this segment, it's I'm never prepared for it. But and oftentimes I'll hear your prediction and flip mine. So, hey, let's go with it. What do you think we've got, buddy? Because I've got to figure mine out.
Oh, boy. I was really hoping you would go first this week, actually.
I can. I'll just throw it out there.
No, you put me on the spot.
I got it. Duckies win 34-24. 10-point win.
Okay, two straight weeks where we're very, very much – like, we're very close on our scores, which is how I know that I feel good about it. Because any time where we've come out on far different sides of things, it's always ended up being weird. And it's usually because it's a weird game we're going into. This one, I do have a decent feeling about it. And I love that 34 score for Oregon. I love that 34 score so much, because I can – four touchdowns, two field goals just feels right in this ball game. It feels like exactly what I could expect. Probably three touchdowns out of running backs. Knicks is able to throw for one. We get within Lewis's range. Maybe he has to hit a real deep one at the end of the half or something like that. I could for sure see it. BYU, though, I think that they're going to be able to score a little bit more than you're giving them credit for. Just a little bit. I think they've got an extra touchdown in them. I'm going to go final score for this ball game. The Oregon Ducks don't beat the spread, but they win the game. Final score, Ducks 34, BYU 31.
Ooh, that's a little too close for my liking. But, hey, I can see if we have a defensive performance similar to the first week, how it could get that way. But from what I saw, man, I don't know if BYU has that against our defense. I'd be very concerned for the rest of the season if they're able to go into Austin in the kind of situation I think we're going to put them in, with as exciting as it's going to be with the 2010 Hall of Fame class coming back on the field. Man, I just think that the energy level at Austin is going to be something else, and I can't wait to see everybody there.
It'll be a lot of fun, man. I'm telling you, if Oregon can really strengthen up around the edges, I feel confident taking one of those scores off the board. But just given what we've seen right now, given some of the speed from the quarterback position, the wide receivers, especially if they have one or two of those guys coming back from injury this week, I feel confident with that 31-point mark. I do, but I got to give Oregon the edge in this game. If anybody is going to pick against them on this podcast, generally it would be me, but I'm not even going there this week. I do feel confident in this team's ability to get this game done. It's going to be a tight one. I think it really does have classic material written on it. It really could be a fun game that, when we look back at the 22 season, the Oregon BYU game is definitely one that will be worth a rewatch. Hope that's the case. And more importantly than that, Nick, look forward to seeing you, and hope to see as many of our listeners as are going to the game on Saturday as we can there at Austin Stadium.
Well, I already know this is a classic episode I'll want to go back and listen to many, many times over again, as I do all our episodes, and I hope our fans do as well. And if you're not already subscribed, make sure you're subscribed on any podcasting platform you prefer, but especially where you can see our beautiful faces on YouTube. As we launch this on Friday around noon, I'll probably be en route to Eugene. Very excited for it. And man, can't wait to see everybody there, all hyped up about it. Hopefully you see me sometime before, after, maybe even during the game. Just hit me up. I'll be easy to find at Nick R. Cody on Twitter. My friend over here at Samuel101TS. Make sure you're following. Keep in touch. And as always, once a duck, always a duck.